You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up at 7, it's Reveal. Reporter Tennessee Watson was sexually abused by her gymnastics coach when she was a kid. Over 25 years later, when she learned he was still coaching children, she called the police. Her inside account of seeking justice in her own case spotlights a lack of accountability. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, for years, many people's understanding of Native Americans has been through maybe the stories they studied in grade school American history classes. Those are stories that might have focused on the first Thanksgiving, smallpox, the French and Indian War, or the Trail of Tears.
A new book is taking a closer look at the plight of Native American communities today. Right now, Native Americans have the highest rates of poverty of any racial group, have youth that are affected by gang violence more than other groups, and also struggle with suicide as a leading cause of death among Native American men.
Our next guest says the cause of these problems facing Native American communities isn't in the stories we were told in school necessarily, but in the federal government's policies today. Joining us now is Naomi Schaefer Riley. She's a weekly columnist for the New York Post and a former Wall Street Journal editor. Her most recent book, The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians, is out now. Naomi, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, one of your overarching points in the book is to understand the problems of Native Americans today. Don't so much focus on the history. Look at federal government policy today. Why is that a better starting point?
Well, I think there's no denying that this history of war and forced assimilation has had a tremendous effect on these communities. But I think most people don't really understand what it means that Native Americans today are living on reservations. They don't even really understand what a reservation is. So I try to start there. A reservation means that the land is held in trust by the federal government. Originally, of course, these policies were put in place to push Native Americans out of the way so we could pursue our manifest destiny. But now, actually, the policies are preventing Native Americans from exercising economic freedom. And what I mean by that is that Native Americans don't actually own reservation land. The fact that it's held in trust by the federal government means that they can't buy it and sell it among themselves without the approval of a staff member at the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington. It means that if an American Indian wanted to go to the bank and get a mortgage to purchase a house, he could not do that because the bank would say you don't have the underlying title to the land. And of course, many Americans also use their home and their property as equity to start small businesses. And Native Americans don't have access to that capital either because they don't, again, technically own the land.
Right, and that's, you've gone right to the core of your argument, I think, that the way that reservation land is owned hurts economic prosperity or prevents economic prosperity for Native Americans. Can you spell out a little more how big the damage is as you see it?
Sure. So, I mean, let's just start with the first part. You know, like I went to, for instance, the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Montana, and I spoke with a man there who simply wanted to purchase some land from a neighbor in order to graze some cattle that he owned on a larger piece of property. And he and his neighbor agreed on a price. And a member of the Bureau of Indian Affairs came in and said, no, we don't think that's fair market value for the land. Now, of course, for most Americans, fair market value is what someone will pay you for the land, not an artificial price that the federal government sets. But it's even sort of more ironic than that in the sense that the federal government had just surveyed the land for some other purpose, and they had specifically told the surveyor to boost the price so as, quote, to not screw the Indians. So, of course, in the end, neither the buyer nor the seller got what they wanted. But I want to also focus on this question of not being able to get a mortgage because it's hugely important. There is a severe housing shortage on these reservations. Now, of course, if you live in New York City, you know, a housing shortage means to you that there just aren't enough apartments and there's not enough space. But the notion that on these reservations, which sometimes run to millions of square miles, the notion that there's not enough place to build a home is crazy. And so what you see is a lot of temporary homes, a lot of trailer homes, and people piling into homes, you know, many extended families living in tiny trailer homes. And it is just outrageous, in my opinion, that people have to live like this because, again, of the reservation policy.
So is it impossible to buy land from a Native American on a reservation, or is it just prohibitively difficult given regulations that you were touching on?
Well, Native Americans can try to exchange the land among themselves, but as one tribal legislator I spoke with on the Crow Reservation said to me, we are the most overregulated race on Earth. And what he means by that is there are actually over 9,000 bureaucrats at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The name BIA, you know, which is the acronym for the Bureau of Indian Affairs, most Indians call that the bossing Indians around. That's what they think it really should stand for, and with good reason. I mean, these bureaucrats are intervening in every aspect of their lives, from the purchase of land to, you know, to food stamps, to housing policy, to health services. There's very little autonomy that we give these people. Even the language, using the phrase in trust, I think is offensive, because, you know, the only people that we legally hold things in trust for are children and the mentally incompetent. So I think it's shameful in the 21st century that this is the way we talk about our Indian policy.
Talking to Naomi Schaefer Riley, her new book is called The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians. She says there need to be serious changes in the way tribal land is owned, managed, and ultimately by the federal government currently to try to turn around poverty in Native American communities. Naomi, you point toward a couple of arguments that you think are at least not the whole story or maybe red herrings in this conversation. One solution pointed to is that the federal government should give more money to reservation communities.
Right. So there's no doubt that we have, have treaties and agreements where we say, we will provide education and health care as a federal government to Indian communities. And we have done an absolutely abysmal job of this, despite sending billions upon billions of dollars each year to these communities. American Indians have some of the worst public schools in the country. They have a 50% graduation rate. And I visited some of these schools, and it is absolutely appalling what goes on there. I was taken around one school by a principal. She took me to a math class where she offered to answer the questions of some second graders, and she actually got the math problems that the second graders were doing incorrect. She has fired teachers there who came from Teach for America because she basically found that she thought they were sort of too paternalistic for her, but many of the teachers are completely incompetent, and it's not surprising. The result of the fact that there is no private sector on these reservations, that there is no private sector employment, is that public sector jobs become hugely important. They are the most sought after jobs. So if you want to be the fourth grade teacher and your uncle or your cousin happens to be on the tribal council and you want that job, it doesn't matter if you're qualified. They will give you that job. And so you can see how this has completely, I think, undermined the quality. And no amount of money from Washington is going to change that. Similarly, the Indian Health Services is a place that no one would want to go as their first option or even their last option as a place to get health care. We have poured billions upon billions of dollars into this. We obviously need to help, I think, Indian communities come up with better solutions. I'm not saying we need to turn off sending public funds to them, but for instance, you know, South Dakota and actually a number of the states that have the largest Indian communities actually have no charter school laws. So, for instance, they cannot have, there are no alternative schools in most of these reservations, and they really don't have any options for their children.
You also say the focus on some cultural issues, Native American stereotypes for sports teams, that kind of thing, isn't a primary concern for the people you talk to.
It absolutely isn't. I mean, I went to a variety of Indian communities across the country, and I was hard-pressed to find somebody who thought about changing team names or mascots as a priority in addressing the needs of their community. And as you can see from a recent Washington Post poll that suggested that 9 out of 10 or more than 9 out of 10 American Indians said they didn't really care about the name Redskins for the Washington football team. And that's not really surprising. As you pointed out at the beginning of the program, you know, this is a community where suicide is the leading cause of death for boys ages 10 to 14. So the notion that things like sport team names are going to severely affect their outcomes is, I think, absurd and in some ways fairly offensive. I also think that this, you know, you hear, you know, people say, well, you know, isn't this affecting, you know, their psychology? For kids who are growing up on these reservations in poverty with few educational options, poor health services, disintegrating families, I really think we need to put sports teams at the bottom of the list.
Talking to Naomi Schaefer Riley. She's the author of the new book, The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians.
And we want to hear from you. Are you a member of a Native American tribe here in Wisconsin? How important do you think property rights are? And do you think that life for Native Americans would change if people on reservations were given property rights? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. That's 800-642-1234.
We'll be back with this conversation here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation now with Naomi Schaefer Riley. She's a weekly columnist for the New York Post. Her new book is The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or posting on the Central Time Facebook page, where we've also posted an article by our guest. Tell us what you think we should be focusing on in the national conversation about Native American communities. And do you think we should be paying more attention to federal policy toward Native American tribes? Call 800-642-1234.
And Naomi, before we get to our callers, what would it look like if we changed the way property ownership works? What would change on a reservation?
Well, it's interesting. Our neighbors to the north are actually a little bit ahead of us in this, as with perhaps some other things. They actually have a very similar system in Canada called the reserve system instead of the reservation system. And a group of First Nations in British Columbia have actually put together something called the First Nations Property Ownership Act, which I think could serve as a really interesting template for the United States. Right now it's being considered in Parliament. And what they have done there is they've said this is a program that reserves can opt into. That is, if you don't think property rights are a good idea for your community, you don't have to accept them. But these leaders of these First Nations that I interviewed said the way it would work is that First Nations would retain control over the land, but individuals would be able to buy and sell their land either to other members of First Nations or to non-members if they wanted to. But similarly, you know, with, say, the city of Boston or the city of New York, even if the land is bought and sold among individuals, the underlying title still remains part of the city of Boston or part of the city of New York and is governed accordingly.
We'll go to our callers now with Joan in Superior. Joan, hi.
Hi. I certainly agree with what the speaker has to say about tribal land and the way that it's fractionated. I do have some contention, though, regarding Indian health care and education. I live in Superior. I work and am enrolled in a band in Minnesota, Fond du Lac, and we have excellent health care, two clinics, eye doctors, dentists, all kinds of medical, physical therapy, mental health. I've been a school board member on the tribal, for our tribal school. All our teachers are licensed. They all have four-year degrees. They're licensed to the state of Minnesota. And the speaker made it sound like, you know, we just had wacky people that were the daughter of the tribal council member because they wanted to be teachers. I mean, everybody has to be a licensed teacher with a four-year degree and a valid teacher's license.
Joan, thanks for the call. Naomi, are things different from reservation to reservation?
Certainly they are different from reservation to reservation. And, you know, in part, it depends on the availability of other employment nearby. So, you know, if you have other private sector opportunities, I think those public sector jobs become less of the subject of, you know, nepotism and corruption. But if you are, I visited the Pine Ridge Reservation, which is one of the largest and poorest reservations in the United States and South Dakota, and it's really quite isolated. And essentially in reservations like that, that are a little further out west, you know, you're waiting for someone to die to get a job. I mean, unemployment rates top 80% on some of these reservations. So there is a great deal of variation from reservation to reservation, but I do think that we need to focus in terms of changing policy on the reservations and the Indians who are most vulnerable at this point. I mean, one thing people often ask me is, why don't American Indians leave the reservations? And many of them do. I mean, there are about a million people living still on reservations. But the people who are left behind are unfortunately some of the most poor and the most vulnerable and the most uneducated. And those are the people I think that we need to worry about in terms of changing policies.
Time for one more caller with Ben in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hi. I have lived and worked on Elise Lake Nation for a number of years. I have an issue with the idea of breaking it down to property. The Red Lake Nation does not parcel up their land, and it's all in the hands of the nation. And Red Lake has the highest rate of cultural retention, religious contention, linguistic retention of all the Ojibwe nations. Where Leech Lake, about 3% of Leech Lake is in Native hands because most of it's been bought up as a vacation community by white people. And I think that parceling up land would further degrade the cultural integrity of these tribes.
Ben,
and
thanks for the call. I want to give our guest time to respond. This the idea that if you parcel out the land, break up the land, you're breaking up more than that. You're breaking up maybe the culture, the cultural cohesion, Naomi.
Well, I guess I'm confused because it sounded like your caller was saying that they had the most cultural cohesion, but that the land had already
been broken up. He's comparing two different ones.
I misunderstood. In general, cultural cohesion is most visible among tribes where they have the most wealth. And that's actually true across not just American Indians, but across other communities in the United States. You can see how immigrant communities that have done well have actually been the most able to retain their language, to retain their culture over time. So I say to those people who are concerned about retaining culture and language, you know, you have to get past the point where you're worrying about your daily basic survival, and then you can worry about things like retaining culture and language.
Naomi, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Naomi Schaefer Riley. She's a weekly columnist for the New York Post and a former Wall Street Journal editor. We've been talking to her about her most recent book. It's called The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians. You can read an article drawn from the book. We've got that linked on the Central Time Facebook page. And while you're there, you can share your thoughts. And if you're a member of a tribe or have lived close to a reservation, let us know your experiences there as well. Again, that's at the Central Time Facebook page.